Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, November 9th. I'm Ray Graff. Rich Guthrie is back in Studio A to field your birding questions. Birds. People can't get enough of the birds. And we are here to help you figure out what it is you're seeing or hearing. Give us a call. 800-348-2551. If you want to imitate a bird call, bonus points to you. 800-348-2551 is the number. You can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org. And some people have already done that. But if you want to call, lines are open now. 800-348-2551 is the number. Richard P. Guthrie, birds, and you. It comes up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today, and when we do that, we welcome Rich Guthrie. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He's a former board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. If you have a birding question, call us. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Email, if you wish, voxpop@wamc.org. That's voxpop@wamc.org. But the number, once again, is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, welcome back, sir.
Hey, Ray. So nice to be here.
Before we start the show, Rich, I want to apologize for the mishap with the coffee machine. You put the pot in, you think it's coffee, it's tea, then you mix some coffee in, and coffee and tea is awful together.
It does not mix well.
I'm so sorry, Rich.
You know what? We survive.
You know, if you were more of a real, like, superstar type, you would walk out and say, you know what, that was not in my rider.
Hey, wait. Let me double check.
Anyway, you brought a huge book with you. What's that all about?
It came in the mail. I totally forgot that I even ordered it before, you know, pre-publication.
It weighs a ton.
Yeah. I joke with that postmaster, Tom, down there. I said, I did not, when it was in the box, and then, you know, he's handing it over to me. I said, I don't remember ordering a box of bricks. This thing here weighs a ton. He said, be careful, don't put your hand under it.
It's the complete, what is it? The Complete Birds of North America. This is a National Geographic book, third edition.
The other two editions were the kind that you put in your, not exactly in your back pocket, but you carry with you out in the field.
Right.
This one here, you're not going out in the field.
You need a pocket to do
you
that.
You need a truck to put this in, to bring it out there. But I've been looking through it. I'm fascinated by it. It's just so full. I mean, complete is an understatement. It's got it in there.
You are an expert. What about those who are not experts? Are you going to have a fun time with that?
It's got so much stuff in there that I think, you know, you could easily look at this thing and put it down and run screaming out the door. Because it can be a bit overwhelming. There's like 73 pages devoted to tube noses.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
Tube noses.
Tube noses.
What's that?
Tube noses are the birds that include the albatrosses and the shearwaters and the storm petrels.
Yeah. 73 pages.
And you have to be 100 miles out in the ocean to see one of these things. But you got them covered in here.
Well, I like that, though. If you're not going to see one in real life, at least you got 73 pages.
That's what I like about
through.
This book. I've been just learning stuff that I didn't even know I didn't know.
That's not true. You know everything about birds. Stop it, Rich Guthrie.
A lot of great features in here that I, you know, it's just a page turner as far as I'm concerned. It's the kind of thing that you can pick up and look at, and just, it'll be a while before you put it back down again.
Oh, very interesting. Well, our number here is 800-348-2551. If you want to talk to Rich Guthrie, the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And Rich, we have had a number of emails that have been coming in since 7 o'clock this morning. And this one's from Lou in Altamont. Can birds eat uncooked white rice with 19 question marks after it?
Sure.
Yeah? Okay. You want to put some exclamation points at the end of that?
No, I'll just put some dots and dashes.
All right, fair enough.
But here's the thing. There's an old country tale. It's more of an urban tale. That if you feed white rice to birds, it'll puff up in their belly and blow up on them.
Yeah.
Won't happen.
Really?
No. And that myth got around so much that we used to throw rice at the bride coming out of the church. Not no more because, a couple of reasons. That myth kind of scared people away. They said, don't throw that. The birds will eat it and die. Not true.
Interesting.
And then the other part of it is that the birds will eat it. They'll come show up at the wedding as kind of like uninvited guests fluttering around while everybody's trying to be, cool and let's just throw rose petals.
Well, all right, fair enough. This email from Ross and Troy. Can Rich explain what to look for or avoid in a bird feed / seed for wild bird feeders? I purchased my first bird feeder this summer, have tried a few varieties of the fancy blends with dried fruit and nuts. The birds would take about a week or more to empty the feeder. A couple times, I had to dump the feed as it was jammed and getting moisture damage. Last week, I switched to a cheap blend from the local hardware store, and the birds are emptying it within hours every day. The cheap blend looks to be mostly cracked corn and millet with sunflower seeds. Of course, a lot of it ends up on the ground. Thanks in advance. You are my favorite Vox Pop guest, and that is from Troy.
Well, Troy,
Ross and Troy, I'm sorry.
Ross and Troy, yes. Troy's Ross.
Yeah, right.
Here's the thing. Keep it simple. And that fruity blend stuff probably, as you've seen, is not the best mix for a lot of our birds. Most of our birds through the winter are seed eaters. And so you want to stick to their preference and diet. So go with the seed. I discourage people from using the cheap off-the-shelf blend from the supermarket or the local hardware store. But Ross has found out that this is working for him.
Yeah.
Most birds will just kind of turn their nose up at it.
Well, the birds in Troy like the cheap stuff a lot.
Well, Ross, there's buddies. But for the most part, what I like to use is black oil sunflower seed.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the treat. And then crack corn, and that's kind of like what keeps a lot of the birds very happy. And crack corn works well. The blue jays love it. The white-throated sparrows like it. The mourning doves love it. And they can be kind of like pushy and hoggy when it comes to bird feeders. So you want to put that over on the side. Let them help themselves. Keep them busy. And let the chickadees and titmice and nuthatches go after the seed, the sunflower seed.
And by the way, Ross has a P.S. here. Ross writes, I live near the Troy Water Tower where we frequently see 10 to 15 vultures sunning. This weekend we saw over 30 all circling in a vortex a few blocks away. It was quite an ominous but beautiful spectacle. Hard to see any red on their heads with my low-power optics. Could these be black vultures?
It could be. But one of the things about turkey vultures, one of my favorite birds when they're in the air. And not so bad when they're perched on a water tower or a cell tower.
Yeah.
But in the air, they're magnificent flyers. They're so agile and graceful and silent and beautiful in the air at any distance. And you could tell them at any distance because of their distinctive way of flying. They don't flap. They just kind of like soar.
Yeah.
And they glide and they coast and they have their wings held up as in a victory. And you could see that. And they rock back and forth like a schooner on the ocean waves. It's just great.
Do they make sounds?
No.
Are you sure? You don't want to just take a stab at a sound that might be a vulture?
Okay, listen to this.
All right, ready. That's not funny. All right, this email from Bob.
Well, let me finish on the vulture there. About the question about the black vultures.
Yeah.
They're there too, but they're kind of like vultures on training wheels. They don't got it with the graceful soaring flight. They're kind of like, yipes, I'm falling, help.
Ah,
flight.
Yeah.
And that's basically what they do. Flap, flap, fall. Flap, flap, fall.
All right. This one is from Bob. Can you ask Rich why the cost of bird seed has skyrocketed? A 20-pound of deluxe Audubon seed used to be $21.95. Now it's $10 more. What's the deal?
It fluctuates. And I can't explain the whole economics of bird seed, but a lot of it has gone. A lot of the crops out in the area have gone into other more cash crop value.
All right, so you don't want to blame the supply chain issues or
no, it's not an international cartel that's driving things.
All right, this one's from Mike in Saratoga. Rich, I had a pair of New York bluebirds in my backyard till about 5 days ago. They kept landing on my birdhouse and checking it out. Just wondering if they were potentially thinking of wintering up here in Saratoga. They appear to be gone now. Where do bluebirds typically spend their winters?
Not far from here. In fact, they could very easily overwinter in Saratoga and the surrounding areas, right on through New York, New England, except probably in the highest elevations. But and what they would probably doing was they like to get together over the winter and form a communal roost.
Yeah.
And so you'll find 2, 3, 4, 6, 8, 10 all going into the same little nest box or tree hollow to spend the night together.
And
how
that's
cozy.
Just to conserve warmth and
yes.
such?
Yep. And they, you know, they there was a beautiful photograph on Ontario birders one time that showed somebody lifted the lid off a bluebird nest box and took a picture down in there, and it was all these bluebirds all huddled around looking up, and it was a darndest thing.
Rich Guthrie is our guest, and by the way, we will get to the phones momentarily. We'll do one more email here, and then we'll take a break, and then the phones, 800-348-2551, so hang in there if you're on hold. This one's from Joan. At a nearby wildlife sanctuary, a large group of wild geese are in residence in the spring and summer and start heading out in the fall. Rich, I'd estimate 75% of the geese are gone now, but what's with the other 25%? Is there a discretionary factor to migration?
Yeah, very, very much. In fact, it's more of a learned factor. Some of them have learned that it doesn't make any difference. Stay where you are. It doesn't get any better in New Jersey, so might as well stay here.
Okay. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. Birds on the show, 800-348-2551. The number, Fran is in Gallatin. Fran, you're on.
Hi. Well, first I want to say that I had a similar experience as Dr. Chartoff did with a hawk. I opened the door to go out, and a cat came running in, and I looked up, and there was a hawk with its talons out. And when he saw me, he retracted them and went away.
Wow, that happened to Alan?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't hear that story. I'm surprised the hawk didn't take him away.
Yeah. Anyway, my question is about migrating birds, specifically robins. Whenever I see robin, I see a robin, or maybe two robins. But one year, robin migration landed in our yard, and they covered the yard and the adjoining field. It was like probably 2 acres of robins, and it looked like the ground was undulating.
Oh, cool.
How do these birds who don't hang out together all the time find each other for their migration?
It's sort of like I think of it as leaves getting caught up in the wind. The moment is there, they're all have the same idea at the same time, and they find one another and go from there. The birds keep in touch by sound and sight, and most birds will travel in groups, large or small, you know, so that they have one another for sort of not companionship, but just for useful navigation systems. And the robins are one of those, and they do move around in large groups sometimes. In fact, just the other night, I was looking up and I saw hundreds and hundreds of robins overhead, way, huh. way up high. I was actually focused on an airplane going by with my binoculars, and there in the same field was a robin, a bird. I didn't know what it was. It was so far away. And then I studied it for a while, and there was another and another and another, and I looked around. And like I say, there were hundreds of them all heading in the same direction. And then I scanned around further, coming in from all points of the compass. So, yeah, they have incredible eyesight. They can keep an eye on one another over long distance. And when they get hungry, they all seem to get hungry at the same time. And say, okay, take a lunch break, and they all come down.
Oh, that's very interesting. Thank you.
Oh, I love it when it happens, though. And one time I actually counted a flock of these robins coming into roost. And I used a little calculating method of doing it. And I estimated over 100,000 of them coming into one small area for the night.
Fran, thank you for the call, Fran. What calculation method did you use?
I counted periodically. I counted for a period of time, and I forget, it was 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes. And then I did it again after a spell, and I graphed it out. I put a chart out, and it was actually pretty much a sine curve.
It's very interesting.
Yes, at least a half curve.
So all of you prospective birders out there, and you're still in school, make sure you continue with math class. It's much more complicated, this birding thing. John in Pownell, Vermont. John, you're on.
Hey, Rich. Hey, Ray. Thanks for the opportunity entertaining my question.
Sure.
My wife and I encountered some what we viewed as atypical owl behavior this last spring. I was walking down to our mailbox in the middle of the night, very dark. I had my flashlight with me, but it wasn't on, and was startled while walking on the driveway by a loud noise. But it was sort of a friendly noise. It sort of sounded like, and I turned the flashlight on. I couldn't spot what it was because it was actually almost at eye level in the shrubs next to me. And I continued on my way, got my mail, came back. The next day, we heard the same sounds. We come to discover it appeared to be two or three barred owls, and they would hang out in the trees while we walked through the woods in full sight. They would follow us through the woods. You know, we have some paths in our backwoods and stuff. As I did my chores, they seemed to follow me from one side of the property to another, and they would land on branches in full sight, doing the same very friendly, low vocalizations.
Hmm.
Now, we've heard owlets screaming for food before, nothing like that. These were friendly, quiet, low-key. Then all of a sudden, they disappeared. They stayed with us for a couple of weeks, maybe. I just wondered if you ran into that, had any kind of explanation.
He looks perplexed, John. We'll see what happens.
You got me there, John. It sounds fascinating. And first of all, the owls are more tolerant of people than people realize. And that is because they're so used to people not even knowing that they're around that they generally get the sense that people are going to ignore them and not bother them. And that these particular owls were following you around, that's kind of fascinating. I've never heard of such a thing. And that whistle sound that you made, I'm not familiar with that coming from barred owls. You described the food call of the young, and that's certainly not how it sounds. It sounds that other food call sounds harsher and quite attention-getting.
Yes.
The soft, friendly sound that you describe, I don't think I've ever heard. In fact, I thought you were going to say it was a screech owl, which really doesn't screech, but has a nice, soft, whinnying whistle. But so that's an interesting tale, and that they dispersed is not surprising because they do have to sort of like give up the territory so that there's enough food to go around. So they will have an extended family group through the good hunting season, and then as winter sets on, they have to peel off and hive out. So fascinating, and I'm going to have to do a little bit of reading about that and find out about this behavior. It seems a little odd for me.
Good thing you have a 50-pound National Geographic Complete Birds of North America.
And I'm going to look to see if it's in there. I'll get back to you.
John, do you want to follow up?
Thanks much, guys.
Hey, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 if you want to talk to Rich Guthrie. 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Joe writes, I know Rich is a true birder, but I believe I may be a little more dedicated. I once faked my own death for 2 days to attract turkey vultures. You see, everybody's a comedian. Let's go to...
apparently it worked.
Joan in Schenectady. Joan, you're on.
Hello, Ray. Hello, Rich.
Hi.
I have another question about hawk behavior, and in particular, their hearing. I know their eyesight is great, but I'm not sure about their hearing. Earlier today, my neighbor and I, we were outside chatting, and I was looking up in the sky, as usual, and I saw three birds definitely together, but I identified them as hawk by the way they were circling in the updraft. I immediately whistled. That's what I do. I was immediately whistled to them, and I was immediately yelled at by my neighbors for trying to call in the hawks. They all stooped together, and we only had enough time to wonder, is it like two parents trying to teach a full-grown immature? But anyway, all of a sudden, boom, 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 three red tails right in the maple trees above our heads.
Really?
How far can they hear? And would they come to a silly whistle?
No.
Exactly. Thanks.
Some of the hawks have incredible hearing. And they actually have physiological features that parallel those of the owl, which we know have amazing hearing. They can find food in total darkness. Mm-hmm. And the Northern Harrier and the other harriers all have this remarkable ability not only to hear well, but to funnel the sounds, sort of like putting an ear hearing aid on. Like an ear trumpet.
Yeah.
That's it. Yes, and zero in on the location of the sound where a mouse may be scurrying around in the thick grasses of a meadow, and they can find it. Now, the red-tailed hawk and the other hawks, they don't rely on sound so much for finding food. Their MO is using visual cues, and they can see beyond our visual spectrum. They can see into the ultraviolet that we can't see, and incredibly, you think the vole has a secret, but he doesn't when he's under that snowbank, and he's emitting infrared images out there that the hawks and owls can pick up on. So it's really remarkable how that works. As far as the hearing is concerned, I'm going to put all of that, in my mind anyway, into the pigeonhole of coincidence. And
okay.
They were probably all taking advantage of the same bubble of warm air that they use, and then coming down to the same tree for maybe the same mouse. But I will say that ahead.
Right.
You can tell your neighbor that they came down. It wasn't your fault.
It wasn't me.
No.
Okay, thanks.
All right, Joan, thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551. If you want to talk to Rich Guthrie, 800-348-2551. You can email us as well at voxpop@wamc.org. We go to Lynn in Shelburne Falls. Lynn.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have wondered one thing, or a lot of things, but this thing. How late do the late nesters nest in New England?
Probably into the middle of September. Some of the late.
No kidding.
This is likely the third brood for a particular pair.
Mm.
And I've seen birds feeding young in early October. So red-eyed vireo and eastern wood pewee, and those two come to mind, but then some of the other ones perhaps. So September's not too late, but most of them are done in August. I mean, they're finished in July, and they got the young out of the nest, and they're ready to move out in August.
Well, thank you so much. That was great.
Lynn, thank you for the call. Rich Guthrie joins us today. Ruth in Hampton, New York. Ruth.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi.
We have a pair of barred owls that live on our land and have for many, many, many years. I've even had the opportunity to be able to photograph at least one of them. But we know there's a pair because we do hear in the spring them actually almost simultaneously calling back and forth to each other. But I was just curious, do the females have a different vocal range than the males? Or is this common that they kind of have made this our home and have not left?
Yes to both. The females have a deeper voice than the males. They're larger than the males, and they are the deeper voice of the two, but with barred owls and great horned owls and the like. I can't speak about the others because they don't. The other ones don't have the typical hoot. They don't give a hoot, right, so to speak. And they do stick around like that. Probably will continue on that territory as long as they can, from year to year. So you've got yourself some neighbors who are there to stay.
Well, we hear them all the time, even in the middle of the winter. So we're very fortunate.
Very good for you. I love it.
Ruth, thanks a lot for the call. Now to, let's see, Schenectady. Fred, you're on.
How you doing, Rich? This is Fred. Hey, two friends of mine and myself were hunting in northern Saratoga County early Sunday morning. Very loud noise was approaching. We didn't know what it was. I was seeing signs of feeding in the leaves. I was told they were starlings, but they came in wave after wave after wave. There were thousands that landed. I'd never seen anything like that before.
Probably flocks of blackbirds, more likely, if they were coming into the trees out there where you were hunting. Red-winged blackbirds and grackles congregate in those huge numbers. Starlings do as well, but they're more apt to be found in the urban setting and in an active barnyard type of situation. But out there in the woods, especially if there's a wet meadow nearby or a wooded swamp, I'm going to say that they were red-winged blackbirds and grackles and cowbirds in a mix.
Interesting. Yeah, because we were near the Thousand Acre Swamp. So, yeah.
And
very good.
When about was this? What month?
Oh, this was Sunday.
Oh.
Probably about 8:30 in the morning.
Interesting. Well, again, I'm going to suggest that they were groups of blackbirds which migrate in huge flocks, and when they descend, they put a capital D on descend.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Fred, thank you for the call. We appreciate it very much. It's Rich Guthrie today. We talk birds on Vox Pop, and our number is 800-348-2551. Email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And Nick writes, I live in the upstairs of a brick house with the attic above me and the chimney for the water boiler next to my window. In the summer, there were things flying in and out of both. I think it's chimney swifts and bats. Is this a thing?
Oh, yeah. Good for you. Chimney swifts, as they live up to their name.
Yeah.
They're very fast and they like chimneys. And, it's becoming harder and harder. They used to see chimney swifts quite often in almost any village or urban setting. Now, with people putting caps on chimneys and the like, they're finding it more difficult to get a nest site. You know, interesting, before there were chimneys, they were restricted to hollow trees. And those are few and far between. So when the colonists came in, built houses and put chimneys up, it benefited the chimney swifts.
So now, prior to the colonists, they were known as hollow tree swifts?
Tree swifts, yeah, that would work, yeah.
Okay. Nick also writes, why do geese love golf courses so much?
Grass.
That's it?
Yep.
There's grass everywhere.
Yeah, well, here it is, nicely mowed and wide open. They like the wide openness of it all, and they're out there just like a flock of sheep helping themselves.
Rich Guthrie, one more email, then we'll take a break, and then your list of events, and then back to the phones for the home stretch. Our number is 800-348-2551. This one is from Jade. I have a friend in Coleraine, Mass, who claims that she has seen an albino robin and junco in her yard. She's a bit of a nut. Is she pulling my leg?
Nope.
Really?
No, with millions and millions of birds of every species out there, there's going to be the oddball, the unusual one, that shows up every now and then. Albinism is one of those features that, and certainly gets your attention when they're out there, an all-white bird. And the guessing game is what kind of bird is that? Because it doesn't have the red breast and it doesn't have the
right.
the tail with the markings on it. So good job on identifying what they are. So email me and we'll put you in touch with a group that talks about plumage differences in birds.
Well, before we take that break, Rich, what is your email address?
My name, RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com. That's our guest today, Richard P. Guthrie. We'll be back and we'll take more of your calls in a moment. It's Vox Pop. It's Birds Today with Rich Guthrie. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And, Rich, there is a list. I can see it on the desk of things that are going to happen.
Well, yeah, Ray, now that things have lightened up a little bit out there.
You mean COVID-wise?
COVID-wise, yes. Days are getting shorter, but the activity is lightening up. So some of the clubs are getting back out into the field, doing field trips. Not all of them. And two things that come to mind. One is there are a few field trips that may have some restrictions regarding attendance and the like. And the other thing is Zoom. So many great things are happening on Zoom.
Yeah,
that you can participate even across the country and be involved in something a club is presenting in a Zoom feature. So, but here's the thing. This coming Sunday, the 14th, the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club is doing a field trip to Tom Hanek Reservoir over in Rensselaer County, New York.
Oh, yeah. I love that reservoir.
It's a great reservoir, and the birds love it, too. It's a great attraction for not only eagles and some of the ducks and geese and gulls, but also many different songbirds attracted to the waterside down there.
Tell me about that reservoir. I mean, I only really see it when I'm driving to Vermont.
On Route 7,
right?
Yes.
And it's beautiful. Is that a man-made?
Oh yes, oh yes. Reservoir? That's a water supply reservoir.
Man, it's so nice.
And the club, what they do is they do a little circuit tour around the reservoir. And look at it from the roadside and the shoreline.
Yeah,
and it's a very productive birding area. So I encourage it. That's Sunday. Check out with the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club, hmbc.net, for details about meeting and attendance.
Okay,
and then the Hudson River Audubon Society, HRAS.org, will be doing a field trip on the 21st of November to the Lenoir Nature Center in Yonkers, New York. A beautiful place to visit, and it's nice if you're down in that area to be guided around with the folks who know it well.
What, Lenoir is the name?
L-E-N-O-I-R, Lenoir.
So it's almost like Lenoir, quoth the raven, nevermore, which would be appropriate for a bird club, right?
And then the Southern Adirondack Audubon Society is doing a Zoom meeting on Unflappable. And this is a Zoom meeting on December 1st at 7 p.m. And Susie Gilbert will be talking about her book. She's a wildlife rehabilitator that has taken care of many, many birds and other wild creatures that have come under her care.
Do you know Susie?
I know Susie Gilbert, yes,
okay,
and she's and this is co-sponsored by the Southern Adirondack Audubon Society and the Crandall Public Library.
Yes.
So this is a Zoom meeting. Invite yourself in. Go there.
All right.
Bedford Audubon Society. Now, they have a daily hawk watch going on down there at Mount Kisco.
Oh yeah.
A wonderful opportunity to go out there and watch the hawks in migration going over. And then check them out, bedfordaudubon.org. November 14th, they're going to be going to Milford Point, Connecticut.
Ooh, and taking their Bentleys, no doubt.
Roger. And then over there, they ask that you call and or check with them online to pre-register for that.
Right.
And on the November 18th, the third Thursday bird walk. Again,
okay.
And that's a fun thing down in Bedford Westchester County,
in that
County,
neck
New
of the
York.
Woods. Oh, you've been down there, right?
Sure, of
Northern
course.
Westchester?
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
And, you know, surprisingly, it's so close to New York City, and yet they have so much wild and beautiful habitat down
and
there.
So many dirt roads. All of a sudden, someone's going by on a horse. And you say, wow, what the
heck? Where am I?
Yeah. Yes. Aunt Cindy Crawford. Oh, I'll be darned.
Okay, a couple more, and then Through the Eyes of the Crow. And this is a Zoom feature on Friday, November 19th at 7:30 p.m. by the Delaware Otsego Audubon Society, Through the Eyes of a Crow. And this is all about the COVID species by a specialist from Cornell University.
Okay.
And that's Delaware Otsego, DOAS.US. Delaware Otsego Audubon Society.US.
Okay. Roger that.
Okay. And also Delaware, they sponsor, they have the Hawk Watch at Franklin Mountain. This is prime time for Golden Eagles. November is the time to be there to see them. And I understand that tomorrow, the forecast for tomorrow looks really, really good. If you can get out to Franklin Mountain near Oneonta, New York, and check the sky for Golden Eagles going overhead.
Very cool. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. And we go to Pittstown. Eliza, well, let's call the whole thing off. Well, how do you say your name?
Elise.
All right, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi.
Okay. I feed the birds here year-round, and I live in a rural area. And I especially take care of them as much as I can during the winter, especially when it snows. It seems like they don't really have too many options under all that snow. I'm going to be away for the month of December, and I'm really torn and concerned that some of them won't make it. What if there's a big snow dump? What do they do when they can't? When I'm not there?
Well, they'll miss you dearly, but they'll be okay. Birds have, you know, what they're doing is just, you know, I hate to put it this way, but they're kind of taking advantage of you right now.
No.
Yeah, that's the way they are. And, you know, it'll break your heart, but they're going to be fine. They're going to find, you know, have to go back to work and find food. So I think
even the juncos arrived this morning. They go straight to the same spot where I feed them every year.
And it was probably the same ones from last year that are back again.
Yeah, I'm guessing. Yeah.
They know you well. So
okay.
So, yeah, good luck and enjoy your vacation down there.
Thank you very much for the call. The number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie joins us. Joe is in Hudson. Joe.
It's Tim.
Ah, okay.
Oh, Tim. Hi, Tim.
Says Joe on the screen. We'll call you Tim. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, Ray, we've actually emailed back and forth. I'm calling today with regards to, and it has to do with birds, something I love. It's the impact of feral and domestic cats on native bird populations, particularly songbirds. And I think we talked on another show, where at least we were going to bring it up, about how New York State DEC regulations allows hunters to take or kill.
Oh, you dropped out, Tim. Yes, we have gone back and forth on this. And I suggested in one of our email exchanges that you would be a guy, as a former DEC guy, Rich, to address this, and we'll give Tim 1 second to reconnect. Otherwise,
well, I'll go into it from here.
Okay, do you know what he's talking about?
Oh, I do.
Okay,
and I've been out of DEC law enforcement for a long time.
Yeah,
way back when I started my career, I was engaged in that. And back then, it was a thing, and it happened to be true back then too. Some other aspects that I can't say are still valid.
Really?
So I'm not going to speak up and say that you have a green light out there. I know that certain law enforcement officials have authorization to take whatever action they deem necessary when it comes to that, but I don't know about private citizens. So I'm not going to encourage your coach in that regard.
Well, if you could do me a favor, as I have a feeling we'll be hearing from Tim again.
Mm-hmm.
Lord knows the only show he hasn't called on this is Food Friday, and you never know. But if you could maybe make an inquiry or two with your DEC
the
buddies.
The current DEC regulations with regard
to... Maybe for
to,
the next time?
Yes. And I have to agree with Tim that feral cats are devastating on the wild bird population. It's unthinkable that people will tolerate this. Anybody who has a heart for wild creatures, helpless wild creatures, when it comes to things like feral cats.
Okay. All right.
I'll speak on that then.
All right. What about the birds that kill critters? You're okay with that morally?
Sure. Sure. I mean, we could go into a long conversation about who deserves and who's worthy and who's not. And I don't, that's more than a judgment call. That's a scientific call we're talking about here. And when it comes to the birds, we're talking the science of bird populations and sustainability and the critical need for some of these birds and the overwhelming pressure that's put on them by an unnatural source of predation. And, it oftentimes happens where the birds can least afford to affect these losses.
Our guest today is Rich Guthrie. And by the way, John, who called us earlier from Pownell, Vermont, says, hey, listen, if Rich finds out anything about the owl behavior we talked about, if you could pass it along to my wife, it would be great.
We'll do that. When we're back, you got that.
Okay.
It's coming.
Very good. And let's go back to the phones and Neil in Pine Bush. Neil.
Hi. Actually, I live on the Bashakill over near Sullivan County. And yesterday I saw two hawks that if I didn't know better, I would have said they were broad-shouldered, except they had feathers going all the way down to the bottom of their claws. And they were really floofy, like they should be like something out of the Arctic almost. And I could not, for the life of me, figure out why that would be or what was different about them.
Well, there is a
one
hawk.
One was about 30 feet up, and the other one was just above it.
Okay. Well, there is a hawk called the rough-legged hawk that does have feathered tarsi. And they do come down from way further north for the winter, turn around and go back because they live up in the high, cold country up north. And so they do have feathered legs, so to speak. And that may be what you've been seeing. And most hawks have clean.
I've never seen them before, but it was clear. I mean, they weren't that far away. They watched me for a second, and then they flew away together in a pair. But I've seen them around a few times, and yesterday was the second time I got a good look. And, yeah, they definitely have feathers on their legs.
Well, they're just arriving from the north. I've only seen a couple of reports of them so far this season. And if that's what they are, they'll be around until March or early April next year.
All right, Neil, thanks a lot. And to Del Mar, Mike, you're on.
Hey, thank you. Rich, is a squirrel considered an easy prey for a red-tailed hawk?
Apparently so.
The reason why I'm asking. Yeah, we got them all. We got squirrels all over the place. You know, we live in a suburban area, and occasionally I'll see a red-tailed hawk soaring overhead in a circular pattern. And I'm looking at the squirrel, and then I look back up in the sky, and I'm wondering, hey, dinner is here. Why aren't you coming to get it?
Maybe they're full.
So I'm just wondering.
Maybe you. maybe you, Mike. They're a little cautious about coming down and snagging a meal when there's people around.
Really?
But they are into squirrels, which is kind of like a good thing. You've got plenty enough squirrels as it is.
Oh, plenty of those.
Okay, thank you. I didn't know if they were a preferred meal versus a mouse, something smaller or not. So squirrels definitely on their menu. Thank you.
Definitely okay. So. And it's, kind of like interesting to see a red-tailed hawk flying off with a squirrel in its talons and tail flagging in the wind.
I'll never forget seeing it. We were playing catch with the kids out on the street out front, and an owl came out with a rabbit. And the rabbit was almost as big as the owl as the owl flapped along with this thing. It was quite something to see. By the way, speaking of squirrels, Jody writes, is it true you can put cayenne pepper on your bird seed to keep the squirrels away and the birds don't taste it?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. And in fact, where was I? I saw it. It was on sale, and I bought a bottle of this pepper concoction that I could sprinkle on the bird seed. I haven't tried it yet.
You mean like a liquid, like a red hot?
This is a liquid
thing?
Yes, yeah. Right. And gee whiz, I ought to try it on the scrambled eggs too.
Oh, gosh,
see what happens.
It's so good. You know what? You and the birds could hang out and have one hell of a time. Let's go to Jonathan in Chicopee. Jonathan.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I have a couple of short stories, and I won't be too long. I saw this bird in April, and I says, what is that? I've never seen a bird that color. And I went through the bird book. I couldn't find anything in there. Then I realized that all the parts of the bird, which were blue, would be the dark gray color of a junco, and it was a junco-shaped bird. Is that possible that I saw a very strange colored junco?
It's possible. There's more to a junco than that. But, yeah, that's a very real possibility. We mentioned earlier that given the huge numbers of birds that are out there, an unusual one will turn up every now and then, a genetic throwback or a miscue on pigmentation. So, yeah, that's entirely possible.
Yeah. I've also seen red-winged blackbirds that are not red, but they're yellow. In fact, one of them kept coming back to Ludlow over and over. So
Rich has got that look on his face again. Hang on a minute.
Yeah, that is very unusual. And I'm wondering, did you ever get a photograph of that?
No. I was at work at the Hamden Yale.
Yeah, well, you know, what comes to mind is, are you sure it was a red-winged blackbird? It sounds like it was probably something else. I don't know. And there are xanthomorphic type occurrences out there, but I don't know that I've seen something that would be overwhelmingly so on a red-winged blackbird. So I'm thinking maybe it was something else, but I'll leave it to you.
I can tell you this. I saw them at the time the blackbirds seemed to be gathering to migrate, and it's both red wings and grackles together. And this happened in the fall, a number of years, and at least a couple of years I saw this yellow-winged a bird that otherwise appeared to be a blackbird, a red-winged blackbird.
Well, there is a bird called the yellow-headed blackbird, which has a bright lemon yellow head all the way down to the chest.
Are they local?
No, they're not. They're very rare in the area, but they do occur. They get mixed up with a flock of red-winged blackbirds and grackles, and that could be. So they definitely will show yellow.
Jonathan, I'm afraid that's where we will have to leave this today. And, this email is way too long. We only have 15 seconds left, so I apologize to Kathleen. What's the matter, Rich?
I'm just looking. Mention of marine birds on Lake Champlain.
Yeah, Patrick in Colchester, Vermont wanted to talk about that, but as you hear by the theme music, Count Basie is playing. And
it's happening now.
It is?
Yes, Lake Champlain.
So what do you do?
Go look at them. It's wonderful.
Rich Guthrie, what's your email address once again?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
All right, buddy, we'll talk to you next month. Support comes from Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, specializing in wine and craft spirits for more than 20 years, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins, grapesandgrainswine.com. Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales service and installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators, serving the greater Capital District for over 40 years, AmbroseLEC.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 30 years, QFCC.com. And Elot Recycling Incorporated, Glenmont, a full-service recycling company focusing on computer, electronics, battery, lamp, and bulb recycling, servicing municipalities, hospitals, schools, and businesses throughout New York State. ELOTRecycling.com. Once again, thanks to the great Rich Guthrie for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls. Apologies if we didn't get to yours. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Ed Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Tony Yang will join us to help you sort out your computer issues. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for The Book Show.